Welcome to Book Hype, episode 41. I'm Marima, and today I have with me Michal and Karen. How is everyone doing?
Hi.
Yay.
But good.
Oh, no, we're going to keep it enthusiastic today. This is like every time, oh, my life is so hard. No, we're talking about books. It's a good time, you guys.
No, I know. We like haven't done the 9 a.m. records in a little while, and though it's like not even close to 9 o'clock anymore, but I'm just like readjusting to being awake.
No one except me gets to complain about the recording time. So moving on. Today we are going to be talking about Half Bad by Sally Green. We've been mentioning this the last couple of shows. We're going to do a book review show, but before we jump into that, let's talk about what we've been reading. Karen, you weren't on last week when I was abandoned. Not that I'm, you know, bitter about this at all. So since the last time you were on, what have you been reading?
Well, I would like to announce to all the Book Hype listeners that I read The Redheaded League and A Scandal in Bohemia. So that means that I got my signed copy of House of Hades, which I was really excited about.
Did you like the Sherlock Holmes?
Well, I mean, The Redheaded League was like kind of weird. And so I don't really know how I felt about that one, but I actually did quite like A Scandal in Bohemia. That one was actually pretty good.
See? Told you.
Yeah. And on top of that, I finally got to the third book in the testing series, which is Graduation Day. And it's really intense so far, and I'm really excited to see how it ends. And that comes out, I think, in June. So I'll have a review up and probably an interview with the author, so I'm excited about that. And I've been reading Eleanor and Park, which is so good. Oh my gosh, I can't wait to finish it, but I also kind of don't want to because I don't want it to be over, and also I don't want it to be sad.
Well, not all of your dreams can come true, unfortunately. That's exciting, though. I can't believe you're still reading Eleanor and Park. You told me that you were reading that ages ago.
I'm still reading The Book Thief.
Okay. Well, I mean, I can't even process that.
I know. I have like 6 half-finished books right now.
You are a terrible person.
I am.
Michal, what about you? Have you actually finished any books? Maybe you could teach Karen a few things.
I have finished quite a few books. Did I say that I finished The Kiss of Deception? I did finish The Kiss of Deception. And that was interesting. I read The Winner's Curse by Marissa Rutkowski, which I've been hearing a lot of buzz about. It was okay. I actually didn't love it. It was a little, like, it was well written, but some of the, like, decisions she made sort of made me kind of scratch my head a little bit, and it was one of those books that I really didn't think needed to be a trilogy, and then, of course, you know, you kind of come to the end, and it's like, oh, to be continued, and it's like, why? but it was an interesting read. If you're looking for, like, a YA book that's getting a lot of buzz in a very interesting world, check that out. And then I read Half Bad, and then I just finished yesterday Dreams of Gods and Monsters by Lainey Taylor, which was really good. Not as good as the second book in the series, but yeah, really good, a really interesting kind of conclusion. And yeah, I just actually went to an event with Jen on Thursday. I drove up to Massachusetts and I went to a Lainey Taylor event with Jen, so that was fun. And then I finished the book yesterday.
I wanted to ask you about the event because I saw the pictures of her amazing hair, which is just like the coolest thing I've ever seen.
That was me. Oh, Lainey's hair. Yeah.
I saw your wig.
Yes.
I think that's a good look. You should keep it.
I thought so. It's a surprisingly forgiving color. Yeah, it was really cool. I drove like 3 hours to get there, which I have never done before, so that was cool. And yeah, I mean, it was in, what's it called? Mount Holyoke College. and Lainey gave like an interesting talk, and there was like a trivia contest and people taking pictures and then a signing, and it was really fun, and it was nice to see Jen, and it was really small. It was like pretty intimate because it was just like in this, you know, little college, but it was really nice. And she gave some information about the status of the film, which is really interesting. I think Jen tweeted it from our account, that they're like sort of in the getting the script approved and like talking VFX budget stage, which is like a lot farther than I and Jen had kind of thought that they would be. So that's really cool. And I mean, I'm perpetually wary of these movies, but Lainey is an executive producer and she has script approval, which is crazy. So I think it could be really interesting.
Cool. I actually went to a book event. I don't think I talked about it last week when I was all alone by myself, abandoned. I went to the launch of Disruption that we talked about, with Jess Shervington when she was a guest on the podcast. So they had the Melbourne launch like a week and a half ago now. And that was fun to meet Jess, and they had nice cupcakes. So I appreciated that as well. And speaking of like adaptation news, she said there, because her Embrace books, that's like her first big series, they got picked up for a TV adaptation. I think that was actually right around when we were recording. It was just funny timing. But she said that not really any movement on that front, and she would be surprised if it sort of happens. So, you know, lots of things, lots of possibilities of things, but not necessarily things happening. Anyway, books. I finished The Cracks in the Kingdom that I talked about last week by Jacqueline Moriarty. And I didn't love it, and it made me sad because I love Jacqueline Moriarty, but my least favorite trope is like the amnesia memory loss trope. I don't know what you guys feel about that, but it just frustrates me. Yeah. And I didn't know that that was going to happen. I mean, it makes sense, but I just don't really like reading it. So that put me off a little bit. But I guess to sort of cleanse my palate from that, I went back and read a couple of her books that I absolutely adore. I don't know if I've talked about this before, but she has this amazing series, the Ashbury Brookfield series. And there's four books in it, and they're like companion books. And they're all written in letters and emails and notes to each other and diary entries. It's all just written communication. That's like how all of the books are structured, and they're hilarious. They are so funny. So I read Finding Cassie Crazy, which is probably my favorite, and it's sort of about this pen pal program between these two schools. And then I read Dreaming of Amelia, which is the fourth one in the series, and that one I didn't love it so much the first time, but it's kind of grown on me. I think they both have different titles in the US. In the US, they are The Year of Secret Assignments and The Ghosts of Ashbury High. But I would definitely recommend people check them out. And I mean, I'll probably keep going with this Colors of Madeline series, but I just don't like the amnesia thing. Anyway, speaking of things that grow on us, Karen, tell us about our book bites for this week.
Okay. The question is, have you ever had to read a book or series twice before you decided how you felt about it? And I think that this one is kind of appropriate for this discussion, at least for me. But aside from that, I would definitely say the Hunger Games trilogy was probably the first and maybe even the only book or book series that I had to read twice before I really decided how I felt about it. Because once I got to Mockingjay, I was like, what just happened? And I was so angry and I was so disappointed. And then I reread it all again because I loved The Hunger Games so much. And then once I did that, I kind of came to terms with the ending and realized sort of why it had to end that way. And it made it a lot easier, I think, to sort of like take in everything that happened in Mockingjay.
Yeah, I feel like that's going to be a common answer for people, just because Mockingjay, not super popular. Michal, do you have a book or a series?
You know, I don't tend to do a lot of rereading, but one series that I have reread is, I mean, my Lost Years of Merlin, the Megan Whalen-Turner's Queen's Thief series, and I really liked, like, the successive books in the series, but I was never that crazy about the first one, and then I think my first or second reread, I, like, you know, kind of went into it thinking, like, okay, I'm just going to get through this one to read the next ones. And I ended up really, really liking the book, like, much, much more than I had initially. And that was really interesting to me. Like, I could still see some of the problems with it, but I just enjoyed the process of reading it so much more. And, yeah, I think, I mean, it's, rereading is always tricky because sometimes it can expose flaws that you hadn't seen the first time, I think. But, yeah, no, I think it has potential, you know, if you have time in your life to reread books.
Okay, well, I am like the queen of rereading. I reread everything all the time, but I do tend to reread things that I enjoyed the first time. I'm trying to think about this. This is actually really tough. I didn't have that thing with Mockingjay because I loved the first two Hunger Games books so much that even though I read Mockingjay, I didn't particularly like it. I could sort of accept it and I didn't feel the urge to like reread it again, I suppose, to make myself come around to it. Like I have read it since then and I feel the same way about it. Actually, this will be a surprising. The Book Thief, I had to read twice before I got it. Because I think I've talked about this before, but I'm just not a big fan of like World War II things in general. So I tend to stay away from them. And, I had heard all these amazing things about The Book Thief. And I think actually it was my mother gave me a copy of The Book Thief to make me read it. And, you know, as parents tend to do, sort of bully you into things that they enjoy. So I was like, all right, like, I'm not going to like this, but, yeah, I read it the first time and like I could see what it was trying to do, but it was just a bit too, I guess it was a bit too emotional for me. And so the second time I read it, I was able to maybe distance myself a little bit from it and then really like love it, fall in love with it, as obviously we all have realized. And, I'm trying to think, you know what? I think Order of the Phoenix as well was a book that I had to read twice before I could sort of just understand it on its own terms without my own like preconceptions. But yeah, I guess I don't really give books that much of a chance. Like if I don't like them, I probably am not going to give them another shot to read them again.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, like you said, it's you have to have time and things. I think it makes a lot of difference. Like, you know, say in The Hunger Games, if Catching Fire had been really bad, I would probably have, I love Catching Fire, so we're not going there, but I would have probably, you know, I would have probably made more of an effort than I did with Mockingjay because it was in the middle of the series, like say with Order of the Phoenix, it was in the middle of the series. I knew I had to get through this book to get to what was coming next. So I made more of an effort, I think. Whereas, like, if Deathly Hallows, if I really hadn't liked that, maybe I wouldn't have been as bothered. I'm not sure. Now I'm, like, just having a little emotional existential crisis. Thanks, Karen, for bringing
You're
that
welcome.
On.
You're welcome.
Yeah, good times.
No problem.
So I'm interested to hear. So you guys who are listening, let us know if you have, like, a book or a series, something that you had to try it more than once to really decide how you feel about it. And not necessarily that you know, grew to love it. Maybe you read it and you're like, no, I still really hate this book. I think that's okay as well. But yeah, I think that's an interesting question. And do you reread in general? Because that does seem to be a bit of a contentious issue on Book Hype. And you can tweet us at Book Hype or leave a comment on here. Let us know how you're feeling about it. We like your feedback. It's nice and friendly. So I think we can jump into our review of Half Bad, unless you guys have anything else, any other books that have come to mind.
No.
All right. So we are talking about Half Bad, and I keep wanting to call it Bad Half. I don't know if that's just me, but that's how it looks to me on the cover. I don't know if you guys
it's
have...
It's just you.
Do you have the same cover? Do you have a cover where it's like the words are like vertical.
Yeah.
And yeah.
So I have to say, before we even start, I love this cover. And the Australian cover is like black on the front, has a red spine, and then white on the back. Mm. And is that what you guys have?
No, it's at least the jacket is like silver.
Oh no, that's boring.
Well, so, I assume it has the same design on the front with the blood that.
Yeah, but I just really like the way that it puts the dichotomies of the book right on the cover already. I just thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, I liked. So I was like okay about the cover, and then I realized that the blood is actually like a boy's profile, and I was like, oh, that's awesome.
Oh, there's I totally didn't realize that.
Yeah, there's a lot to look at on the cover that I didn't, like, I've had to look at it several times to really kind of see everything. I really like the cover as well. Mine's an e-copy, so I think it's, like, even more boring than the American one, like the actual paperback or hardcover. But, yeah, it has the words vertical, and they're almost overlapping, and I really like how they did that. And then, yeah, the red along the one side looks really cool.
Yeah, I feel like there are so many books out right now with the worst covers I have ever seen. I don't know who's making these decisions, but like publishers, get your act together. But this is just really, really beautiful. I really, really like it. What's inside it maybe will be slightly more discussion about. but anyway, so this is the first book in, it's her debut, isn't it? Sally Green. Mm-hmm. This is her debut book, and it's the first book in her half-life trilogy, make of that what you will. So it's about this guy Nathan. He's a witch, all his family witches, but his dad was the worst witch in the world, and everyone kind of has their eye on Nathan as like a half good, half bad witch, or half white, half black, to see what he's gonna do. So before we talk about the characters a little bit more, let's do our overall ratings for it. So do you think Half Bad is a buy, a borrow, or just don't even read it, Mikal?
For me, this is an absolute total buy. Go out and buy it now, buy it in hardcover. I really, really enjoyed this book. Yeah, I thought it was surprising. I thought it was unexpected and dark and very moving in places, and yeah, I mean, I really, really dug this book, so I would highly recommend people read it. It's also a really fast read, so, like, I read it super, super quickly, and yeah, so definitely, definitely buy it.
Cool. Karen, what about you?
In a shocking turn of events, I would say don't even bother.
What?
Which... yeah, which really upsets me because I hate saying that about books, especially, you know, somebody obviously poured all of their time and energy and their heart into something, and you don't want to be like, yeah, this is not good, don't read it. So I can only speak for myself, and I'm sure, I mean, obviously there are people that really love this book, but for me, it was just very empty, and I just did not connect with it, and I find very little in it that I really enjoyed, I think is the best way to say it. So, I mean, I can get into that as we discuss it, but I didn't really like it.
This is a shocking turn of events.
I know.
What happened to you in the last 2 weeks?
I went to LA, and obviously
came
my
back
whole
so
life
cynical.
Changed.
Yeah,
Los Angeles has corrupted Karen.
All right. Yeah. Remind me to send them a thank you card. I can't make a decision about this book. I don't really know how I feel about it. Maybe I should read it again. I would say borrow, but I wouldn't prioritize it. You know, like, read it if you have time. If you don't have anything else to read, sure, read it. But if you've got, like, anything at all, just anything that you would rather read, maybe do that first and then read this one.
Okay,
I
guys,
just
don't listen to Karen.
No one listens to me anyway. Like, but, I mean, yeah, that's fine. No one pays attention to what I say. Yeah, I think, though, I can understand why it is so divisive. Like, I can understand why someone would really love it, but we'll get into that. Actually, let's get into it right now. Before we talk about the characters, I just wanted to ask a little bit about the writing style, because it is quite distinct. And in a way, I have to say, it sort of reminded me, at least at the start, it was a little bit Zuzak-y. Just in the style and sort of the imagery and things that are used, but it does shift in perspective. Like, there's the second point, and then some of it is in first point, isn't it?
Yeah, most of the book is in first person. There were, like, those two interludes from the cage that were second person. I didn't really get those, to be completely honest. Those weren't my favorite parts.
Really? I loved them.
Yeah. Let me tell you why. I guess it just surprised me, and it was so different from the rest of the book that I was a little confused why
those scenes in particular were. I found that the second person was a way for, like, Nathan as a character to distance himself from his circumstances and from the things that were happening, and I found it really effective as a switch. And I kind of don't wonder why authors don't do this more, don't change up the point of view more. But, yeah, because it's just in those two places when he's in the cage, I thought it worked really well. And honestly, I would have probably enjoyed her using the second point more than she did, because it seemed, in a way, to be a more appropriate manner to convey some of the things Nathan was thinking. So, yeah, I liked the point of view change. But what about the writing itself? Like, I'm assuming you liked it, Mikal, if you are raving about this book.
Yes, I did. I thought it was really spare and really strong. It's very unforgiving in a lot of parts, and she's very she doesn't kind of go overboard with things. Like, she'll convey very strong emotional experiences in a very short amount of time. Like, there's that line where Aaron, you know, after Nathan is brutalized by the O'Briens, Aaron just says, like, I couldn't do it again, and, or something like that. And I just found, you know, and that's all he says, and I found that very, very powerful. There was also her line that she manages to convey also some incredible brutality very sparsely and very well. Like, when Kieran O'Brien is making jokes to Nathan, and he says, like, you know, what's the difference between a half-blood and an onion? When you cut up an onion, you cry. And I was just like, and that's, again, that's really all. And I just found that incredibly powerful. And, like, a lot of the story read to me like a drumbeat. Like, there was always something lurking beneath the surface that I really enjoyed. And very different, also, from what you usually read.
Karen, do you care to counter?
Sure. Well, going back to the perspectives really quick, I am not a big fan of changing perspectives throughout a book. I think it should be consistent. And I think the second point of view was, really kind of confusing in some spots. And I was like, why are you doing this? And I didn't really like the fact that it changed. However, I really did like the second point of view, which is funny because usually I don't, but I found that those sections were a lot more engaging. And that kind of relates to how I feel about the writing, because Mikal, when you were saying, like, it's very sparse and she tends to convey the brutality, like, very simply and bluntly, I think that's the problem that I had with the book on a whole, is that it felt very empty to me, and I wanted more emotions and more inner thoughts. And it was very, I mean, the writing is really cool because she breaks a lot of, like, grammatical rules to kind of, like, keep the tension really high and keep it fast paced. And she has a sentence where she just says, like, this happens and this happens and this happens and this happens, and there's no commas or anything. And that's to kind of, like, keep you moving forward really quickly, which I think it works really well. But everything just felt so empty to me, and I just didn't connect with nearly any of the characters. And while I think the writing was good, I think I just also wanted more.
Okay, interesting. Because I actually didn't find the writing that great, and I think that is maybe because of all those grammatical rules that I was breaking that just didn't seem for any reason. And so as I was reading it, I would get caught up on those things. I didn't feel like there was a flow of the writing that I was following, even, you know, a very, I don't mean flow in like it has to be like a lyrical flow, but even following Mikhail's like drum beat, I didn't feel like it was a consistent beat that I was following. I kept getting caught in these phrases and things. But that said, I think there were some really beautiful moments in it, and some of the writing was incredibly effective, but it didn't feel consistent for me. And that sort of ties into the next thing I wanted to talk about, which was the world building.
Oh, well,
and
again, actually, can I just address Karen's point about the hollowness of the book?
Sure.
I actually agree with you, Karen, but to me, that really worked. That felt like Nathan to me. It didn't feel unnecessary. Like, I'm not saying that maybe there weren't certain parts where, like, a little more detail or, you know, emotion would have gone well, but I think that because it was told, I mean, this is one of the first books told in, like, first person that I've, like, liked in a very long time. And I think that was because of that. You know, there is a hollowness in Nathan. There is something wrong with him. And I guess we could talk about that when we get to character. But for me, it was very emblematic of his situation. And it just, like, it swallowed me up into his perspective on things.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's totally representative of him as a character. And I think, you know, in that way, it works really well. But as a reader, it didn't do that much for me. But I definitely think, like, her choice to have that sort of empty feel to the book was very deliberate, and I think it did work to kind of convey how Nathan felt about himself and his life and his circumstances.
I feel like a lot of these criticisms are going to be continued as we go on. Because, I mean, you guys are basically saying the same thing. It's just that Mikhail liked it and Karen didn't. And
yeah,
I sort of don't care. Like, okay. Yeah, so, I mean, is that the way you feel about the world building as well? Because, like, I felt similarly to the writing that, like, in some places it was good and in other places it was way too sparse and I didn't really understand what she was trying to do. And again, like, I guess that's sort of Nathan, but also, like, if you want me to invest in reading your however many hundreds of pages of book, I kind of need to know a little bit more about what is happening. Yeah, I don't know. Did you guys have similar thoughts?
I was very, like, back and forth on this because in the beginning I was really confused and I definitely wanted, like, way more information up front. And also it like switches back and forth the time frames. Like, there's some flashbacks and some of those flashbacks are really long and I kept getting confused on, like, the timelines and everything like that. But in terms of the world building, definitely in the beginning I was like, I have no idea what's going on. I need more information. But by the end of the book, when I kind of got a grasp of how the book was sort of working and how it was, like, speaking to me as a reader, I was okay with it. And I do kind of like this fairly unique, I think, description of the world and, like, how all of the different powers work and stuff like that. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, unsurprisingly, I really, really enjoyed the world building. I agree it was a little bit, I don't know, maybe underdone. I don't know. I feel like the important stuff about the world building, which is that, you know, you have the black and white witches, and the white witches are just as bad as the black witches, and, you know, everybody's kind of nasty and messed up. I think that came across very well. So, again, some of the stuff that she left out was just intriguing to me. Like, she never explains what fanes are. She never, like, fanes, like, you know, muggles, non-magical people. Like, she kind of skips over that Harry Potter experience, you know, when part of the magic of Harry Potter is, you know, learning about this whole wizarding world and everything. And there are things that she just skips, you know, like fanes and, like, when she says, like, oh, they were going to make a witch's bottle out of Nathan. I was like, what the hell is a witch's bottle? I have no idea. But I really liked that because I could be like, I have no idea what a witch's bottle is. And I don't know, maybe that's a poor writing choice, but I think part of it might be that I'm so used to, you know, reading young adult, which is, you know, not in a bad way, but it can be, like, really swamped in feelings and really swamped in detail and very, like, over-expressive. And this book just came out and did exactly what it wanted to do without it kind of treated you as roughly as it was treating Nathan. And I really appreciated that.
Yeah, I thought that was dumb. Like, don't introduce something into your book and don't tell me what it is. I always feel like that's a poor writing choice because I don't like reading things that are based on... It's fine to read something and, you know, ask your reader to make an educated guess or, like, jump about something. I think that's okay. But if you're doing something, especially in, like, supernatural or whatever, I have no basis to know what her... basis is, you know, like, I don't know what her conception of a fane is or like a witch's bottle is or any of these things, so I don't like if I have to make an assumption in a supernatural book about something like that that could be anything that is like an introduced thing. I always just find it kind of lazy, so good times. All right, let's talk about characters. So Nathan, obviously, is it even right to ask if we liked Nathan? I kind of feel like that's a... Obviously, we feel bad for Nathan, right? Yes?
Yeah.
I feel like that's kind of more the point than you liking him.
Well, something that I really enjoyed also was that, like, you kind of have the tendency to, like, woobify him, you know? Like, you know, you do feel really bad for him, and obviously, like, you're in his head, but at the same time, he is a violent character. He makes stupid decisions. He doesn't read, which is, like, very, very different from your usual protagonist, you know? Like, usually we identify protagonists kind of by their love of fiction a lot of the time, I think. Not usually, but frequently. And, yeah, I really liked that you were stuck with this kid who was deeply, deeply messed up by his circumstances and had a good heart, but a lot of the time that came out in really dark ways. And I enjoyed reading that.
I think the idea of Nathan is more interesting to me than the actual, like, concept of it that was in the book, because Nathan, I mean, I don't want to say this 100 times, but I didn't really connect to him. It was kind of like an empty sort of character. But I really like the idea that the main character of the book is half bad. I mean, he's half black witch, and obviously they identify him more as a black witch than a white witch. And just the idea that the white witches are bad and the black witches are bad, and everybody is sort of like these different shades of gray. And I don't know if there really is anybody in this book that I would say is 100% good. I mean, maybe like Annalise or something like that, but
Gran, come on. Gran is the
best. Oh, and Gran. She's the best. Gran. I did like her a lot, actually. And Aaron. I loved Aaron. But I think, you know, having a book with characters that aren't, I mean, most of the main characters, I'll say, are not good people, and yet you do connect with them, I think that's interesting. Like, the idea of that is more interesting, I think, than, like, it actually playing out in the story.
Like, so who do you mean that you connected with apart from Nathan?
I loved Gabriel.
Okay. And?
I mean,
because I kind of end there as well. I feel like, I think Nathan is a really interesting character, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, but, you know, I think he raises these really interesting issues. Obviously, he's kind of a flashpoint in their society. Once I finished the book, I kind of found the title more interesting in being like, well, he's half bad, but, like, is the bad side the white side or the black side? You know, it's not really made clear, and I think that was interesting. He's not always a really wonderful character to read, I don't think, because, yeah, in a way, like, he is quite simple, and I can see that becoming frustrating although I, you know, I liked the choice of him being illiterate and, you know, like, it just makes a change and you can kind of understand his frustrations when he can't understand things in, like, this way that just seems so simple for everyone else. But apart from Nathan, and even including Nathan, I generally didn't find the characters to be that well developed. And, you know, Nathan kind of goes through this physical journey, but I, in a way, he doesn't go through an emotional journey for me. I felt like he was sort of in the same place at the end of the book that he was, well, I mean, apart from the last 20 pages, than he was at the start. And that kind of goes for the other characters as well. Like, I really liked Gran. I thought she was the best. I loved her. I liked Aaron. I think Aaron and Nathan's relationship was really interesting to me. I don't know what you guys thought about that, but in a way that sort of saved the book for me. Because if that relationship wasn't there, I might have put it down earlier, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I wish there was more of them. I mean, it was sad that he... And I felt that way about Annalise, too, because I really liked her in the beginning, and then she just became this person that, I mean, wasn't really in the book until the end. And even when she was, everything felt very bland about her. And I just found myself not really caring anymore, which didn't happen with Aaron. I mean, I still really like Aaron's character, but I feel like a lot of the people that I really liked from the beginning sort of dropped off by the end.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Well, okay, so I would disagree that Nathan is in a different emotional place. I think, I mean, it's in the same emotional place. I think I think he's in a similar one, but I think his journey through the book is a progressive understanding of the, you know, the real meaning of black and white and, you know, the fact that those distinctions really don't exist. And I don't think he fully comes to that realization for a while. Like, he plays with the idea, but it's not, he's not committed to it. But something that I thought, I mean, I agree, like, Annalise is not my favorite character. I think she is a little bit of a, not a Mary Sue, but like a plot device a little bit. But the idea that, you know, of Aaron and Gran and Annalise all being in Nathan's life, I think is that he's surrounded by some really good people, you know, and he is with them and he loves them, but he's not of them. And he, you know, like, he has this whole confusing journey of, like, kind of being aware that he's different from these people who he identifies correctly as good. And then because they're white witches, he kind of, you know, if, you know, puts that onto the white witches in general, and then finds that that isn't accurate. And it reminds me a lot of a musical called, oh my goodness, Next to Normal, which is about a woman who has bipolar disorder. And it's sort of about, you know, her family trying to support her. And, oh, that's about a lot of things, but that's part of
it. Don't spoil it.
I'm not spoiling it, but her husband is extremely supportive, like almost over supportive and, you know, very, very hopeful and, you know, and all that. And it reminded me of the same thing that, like, you can have people who have problems that aren't fixable and you can have a support system that is the best and they still have to deal with their issues. And it kind of very much reminded me of that and worked for me on that level.
Nope. Sorry. Yeah. Didn't convince me.
Well, I think one of the most interesting concepts.
Yeah, I think Jen did like it. We'll put in one more vote for liking it from Jen.
I think one of the most interesting concepts in the book was the fact that Nathan wasn't, I mean, he's half and half. And, you know, according to them, you know, white witches are good and black witches are bad. And he could have kind of gone either way. But it was the fact that the white witches were so overbearing and so convinced of his evilness that he started to sort of go in that direction. And I think that as a kind of overarching theme was one of the most interesting things for me in the book.
Yeah, definitely. I think that kind of, I guess, you know, that's like the nature versus, it was a self-fulfilling prophecy in a lot of ways, you know, that they, you know, pretended to be like, oh, well, he could be half white, but they, you know, from the start, they were convinced that he was half bad and that the black side of him would come out. And on another tangential note, I think it was pretty clear that this was written by a woman who isn't American, because black witches and white witches mean something, like, is a lot more fraught, I think, in American culture than it is, using those particular terms. But I got used to it. I think that was a big part of what the book was trying to do, that, it, you know, it, and what, something, I think the most interesting part of that to me was that you usually see those kind of things from the outside. You know, you see those transformations happen from, like, a slightly more distant perspective. And in this book, you really got to see the effect of somebody who wanted to be good and wanted to, you know, aspire to those ideals that, you know, were supposedly, you know, the good ones, and just being dragged down both by a combination of circumstances and by his own biology. And that was really fascinating to me.
Yeah, I think that whole nature versus nurture, again, was probably the most interesting part of the book for me. And yeah, like you said, it's sort of the self-fulfilling prophecy of, well, if they hadn't treated him in this way, would he have ended up that way? And, you know, that's a fairly common trope in many books, but I think it worked here. I guess for me, I could have done without the romance, though. That just felt like, she was definitely felt like a plot device, like 100%. There was no reason for her being there otherwise. And she wasn't interesting, so I didn't care about it either way. And it sort of, in a way, detracted for me from what the real question is, which is, like, you know, what effect does Nathan's circumstance have on him growing? And, you know, this question of, like, his relationship with his father and all of that, I found that to be really interesting. And so, yeah, I guess the other stuff just sort of detracted. But what about some of the, like, the other characters we get in the second half of the book? For me, when I was reading this, it's weird. I liked the world building and, in a way, the writing a lot more in the first half, but I kind of like the characters a lot more in the second half once he's on the run. And I think Gabriel had a lot to do with that because he was great. Karen, you agree?
Yes. Yeah. Actually, that's really interesting. The writing in the first half was much better, but the characters in the second half were way more interesting.
Yeah, see? I say things that are insightful sometimes.
I mean, we agree sometimes.
You were agreeing with that statement, right?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, see, I say insightful things. It's all good. Yeah, I really like Gabriel. I thought he was fun. And I liked the sort of ambiguity of his sexuality. And honestly, for a long time when I was reading it, I thought Nathan's sexuality was, like, sort of ambiguous as well. I feel like he doesn't fit into, you know, a strict masculine sort of role, like as shown with his relationship with Aaron and things like that, which I really liked. But I just thought Gabriel was so great. He was so fun. If he had a spin-off, I would read that book.
Yes.
In a second. Probably more than I will read the sequel to this.
I agree. I mean, I like the sequel. Sorry.
Go ahead, Michal.
I liked Gabriel. I for some reason just instantly kind of pinged him as a little bit, like, interested in Nathan. But more interesting to me was Celia, who I thought was, like, a fascinating character, and, like, one that I'm still not sure if I like her or not, but she's, I, you know, especially, like, when the book opens and, like, he's being kept in a cage and this woman is, like, keeping him in a cage, and, you know, the scene where they first meet is so horrendous. And, I mean, it's like, it's this kind of portrait of abuse in the most bizarre setting. And, but Celia ultimately comes to, I guess, if nothing else, value Nathan's life. And that's something that he get so little of. And I thought that contrast was really fascinating, that, like, by the end she was almost willing to risk everything to save him, and, you know, and she couldn't, even though she treated him like total crap for, like, 4 years. 2 years.
Yeah, Celia was so interesting because in the beginning you absolutely hate her because obviously you're inside of Nathan's head and she's horrible to him. But by the end of it, like, I don't want to say I liked her because she still was not the greatest person and she was doing terrible things, but I think the fact that she started caring for him was a huge step forward. And a lot, I mean, this is basically what the book is, but so many of these characters are so ambiguous in whether, like, their morality and whether they're right and wrong or good and bad. And I think hers is probably one of the strongest examples of that. And so I really liked that, and I would have liked to have seen more of what she thought about Nathan and actually about the council in general, because I have a feeling she wasn't completely on board with some of the things that they were doing. And I don't know if that was just in Nathan's case because she did care for him, or if that was, like, in general, she didn't really like what they were doing.
Yeah, I didn't mind Celia's character. I kind of felt like the Stockholm Syndrome thing was hit a little too hard in some of the scenes. Yeah, it's just, I don't know. It didn't really work for me, I guess, until the end, and I understood the point of her. And I feel like she fits into the pattern of what happens with a lot of characters in this book, which is that they're shown to be bad people, but then in comparison, there's always someone worse. Like, I felt like we saw it with Annalise's brothers when there's, like, the younger brothers that don't really want to participate in, you know, the kind of brutality against Nathan. And then, you know, Celia represents sort of the council, but she doesn't really want to go along with what they want to do, which is, yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I get it. There's white and black and there's shades of gray. Everyone's shades of gray. It's just everything was... I didn't feel like there was a lot of subtlety about anything really in this book. And for me, that was sort of the big thing that was off-putting, because I liked the intention and, you know, I appreciated what she was trying to do, but because it was just so blatant and just so blunt in the writing and in the characters and everything, it was too much for me. I'm sorry, guys. I'm a sensitive person. What can I say?
I don't know. I did think it was subtle. I mean, in the way that it kind of wasn't dwelt on, you know, like the whole interaction with, you know, Kieran cutting Nathan's back, which was, you know, really, really vividly done. And I thought that was really intense. Like the fact that the brothers, who we have absolutely no reason to like at all, you know, like it's not gone into. It's not like Annalise says, like, oh yeah, like later, like, oh, they left the council and whatever. I just thought that, like, that one kind of suggestion that they weren't on board was pretty subtle and pretty well done. And the same thing with Celia, that, you know, I mean, I guess I don't even necessarily see it as, like, there's always someone worse. I just sort of see it as, like, people are trained because they're expected to be a certain way. You know, I think that Celia was influenced a lot both by her sister's murder and the fact that the council expected her sister's murder to make her act in a certain way. And, you know, and then there was kind of that other part of Celia that was kind of struggling against that. And it wasn't entirely subtle in that, like, yes, the council is bad. Like, they're nasty people. They do horrible things. They're bad. But, like, I really liked meeting all these other people and kind of exploring, you know, even Gabriel. Like, you know, Nathan has, like, that line that when he's, like, cleaning the gun to kill Annalise. I like that. Like, oh, I was in America for a year. I automatically know how to use a gun. Like, I've lived in America my whole life. I don't know how to use a gun. But
yeah, that's definitely how international people see your country.
I think that's FYI. A little bit, says a little more about Gabriel than it says about America. But, yeah, I mean, I liked that. Yeah, I mean, you know, that line where, like, Nathan says, like, I could see the Black Witch in him. And, like, you don't know if there's a value to that statement because Nathan's starting to see the Black Witch in himself. And, you know, I mean, I don't know. I guess what you guys read is, like, arbitrarily black and white. I found very mixed together and subtle and good and awesome, and why people should read this book.
Oh, we get it. We get it. Mikal thinks you should read it. I think, nah. Karen thinks, don't do it. All right. So, I mean, I feel like that's sort of it with the character thing. The other thing I have to say, and this kind of goes along with, like, Nathan didn't change at all in this book, which, you know, I stand by. I kind of didn't feel like the plot went anywhere either, because, like, at the end of the book, it's just Mercury, bad person, has Annalise, plot device, and Nathan, you know, gets his knife and suddenly he's, like, a serial killer. And, okay, so, like, Nathan has to go off and find the knife and, like, kill his dad. At the start of the book, he's like, I'm never going to kill my dad, and, like, I know this prophecy and la la. And at the end of the book, he's saying the exact same thing. And I guess because I don't care at all about Annalise, I'm like, well, I mean, I don't really see the dilemma here, Nathan. Like, cut and run. Just get out of there. But I just feel like for a book that was almost 400 pages, nothing really happened. And I'm not sure if I'm the only one that feels that way. I'm sure that Mikhail doesn't feel that way. I'm curious what Karen thinks.
I feel that way because the point of the book, obviously, was exploring Nathan's character and whether or not he was good or bad and how his surroundings influenced that. And I think that was achieved. But I think on top of that, you did need more of a plot. And the thing is, like, it had a plot. He was trying to get to Mercury and he was trying to figure out, you know, how to survive and what to do with his life. But that was stretched so thin over the whole book that I couldn't keep up with it. And I think one of the most sort of like deciding parts of the plot and like where he was going was at the end when he decided to go after Gabriel because he had to find his friend. And that was like literally the last sentence. So I don't know.
I don't actually disagree with you guys. I mean, I don't think that definitely the book was not stuffed with plot. It wasn't. And I agree that that could be a negative. I mean, I do think that, you know, sort of the journey for Marcus was very one-sided. I mean, I really liked it because the reason why this didn't bother me as much was because I was so taken with Nathan and his emotional journey that I do think exists, but, I agree. I mean, I'm not going to say it wasn't thin on plot, because it was. And I'm not really sure what kind of the next book is going to hold, but, like, I'm interested to see what happens to Nathan and his ultimate development as a witch, you know, and kind of... It also, what's interesting about it to me is that Nathan, like, breaks the rules on a larger scale, you know, that all these people, you know, even, like, Annalise and, you know, and Mary, like, they're all saying, like, you know, this system sucks, and the council sucks, and these people are evil and mean and bad, and they're doing unfair things, but they're just sort of like, yeah, that's how it is. You know, like, even Gran, like, it's not like they're ever, like, she's really upset at the fact that Nathan is just gonna blatantly break the council's rules. I mean, she's upset for Nathan, not because of the rules, but, like, she doesn't kind of have an idea of changing it. And then Nathan comes along and literally just breaks every rule in the book, which is why the council reacts to him so with such, you know, venom and abuse, because, you know, he threatens, like, every structure of power that they exist on. And I really like that, and I'm just interested to see, like, how this grows, because even the Black Witches are just sort of like that I don't remember if it was I don't remember who said it, but it was just like, you know, Black Witches would just kill each other out, like, if we you know, weren't hunted by the White Witches. Like, they just need to relax and let us murder each other. And, like, it's just like, that's a fact of life, and that's something else that Nathan is against. You know, he's not going to kill his father. Like, to me the book surprised me in that it didn't lead to a place of obvious darkness for Nathan. It wasn't like, okay, now I've, or light, you know, now I've, you know, seen the light and I'm going to kill my dad. It was that he was sticking to these moral principles that are maybe wrong moral principles, but that, like, exist in him, like, in spite of everything. And I found that fascinating. And I feel stupid saying good things about this book now because I feel like I'm inventing stuff, but I really thought that it did things really well.
Well, that's good. We need some positivity on occasion.
I respect your guys' opinion. Now I'm like, am I wrong? Is this book like?
Well, no, I mean, obviously you are wrong, but that's fine.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And one of the best things about the book was the fact that it is so ambiguous and that by the end he hasn't really decided what he's going to do. And he's sort of just, it's not an easy decision to come to, and that he, you know, doesn't really like what the White Witches are doing and stuff like that. But he also doesn't want to kill people, even the hunters that are trying to kill him. And I think that's one of the best things about the book. So, I mean, you know, my opinion about the book is just mine, and I think that there are plenty of other people out there that are going to like the book, and I'm glad that you did, because, you know, those differing opinions are always good to have on the show.
No, we like a cohesive program here on BookBap, so everyone is fired except me, and we'll be returning to Marimo and Friends next week. Jen's not here, so I guess I make the decisions. I didn't hate the ending. Like, I didn't hate that it was ambiguous. What I didn't like was everything in between, which was not enough. The book should have been, if it was this, you know, if it was just going to be this story, she wasn't going to develop anything else, add anything else. Like, it needed to be at least 100 pages less, as far as I was concerned. And unfortunately, all those things that you liked, Mikhail, that, you know, weren't super explained, I didn't like because they weren't explained. And so I didn't know, you know, I had many questions when I finished, and not good questions, like, oh, I'm curious to see where this goes, or like, what happens with this? No, I was like, all right, like, tell me more about this council. Like, why do they exist? And, you know, why is Nathan the only half person that exists, and what about the people that are like half black and half fain, or half white and half fain? Like, why don't we see any of those people, and etc., etc.?
Well, so, we did. I mean, we saw, what was her name, Ellen.
Yeah, but like with no explanation of sort of their role. You know what I mean? Like, I just feel like I think it's fine that she wanted to focus on Nathan. I understand that, but the rest of the society didn't make sense to me because I didn't know enough about it. So that reduces my ability to care about what Nathan's going through. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But that's definitely like a personal, you know, interpretation of it. I can understand how someone could sort of fill in the blanks or might even like that it wasn't explained, but I did like it.
Yeah, I guess, you know, it reminded me a lot of Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell. Have you guys read that book?
No.
Okay. So it's this massive Austenian, it's basically Jane Austen with magic and fairies and darkness and whatever. And it's sort of similar in that way. I mean, a lot more happens. But it's sort of similar in that way that you are kind of dropped into an existing system of magic and that intertwines with the real world that is not entirely explained. I mean, it's been years since I read it, so it might be that that book goes into more detail about the mechanics and explanations than Half Bad does. But just in that way where, like, there's mysterious and magical things, and, like, it's not necessarily that those things are kind of valuable for how they exist by themselves. And, like, the idea of, like, a witch's bottle for me, like, for it just kind of stuck with me that it was almost creepier that I didn't know what it was. And it was like, you know, I mean, I just Googled it and apparently it is a thing that used to be a thing. But I like that. And I like that there's this world that, like, Nathan doesn't really understand. So I don't really understand it either. And it's funny because I'm usually like not a big fan of ambiguity in these kind of books, but I don't know. I just really dug it. I thought it felt like the author was saying, like, you'll find out what you need to know, and the other stuff you'll figure out, you know?
All right. Well, I feel like we have all shared many emotions about Half Bad. We mentioned that it's going to be a trilogy, so I feel like I know the answer to this question. Who is going to be reading the second book?
I will be reading the second
book. I will read it if it's, like, all Nathan and Gabriel.
All right, so Mikhail has to read it first and then report back. I'm probably
curious what happened to the knife, because Nathan had the knife, and then the knife just freaking disappeared, so I don't know, like, I'm very interested to see what happens there, and I'm interested in Annalise, in how she, like, I mean, I, like, look, she's used as a damsel in distress, and I definitely think that Sally Green could have done something better with that, but at the same time, like, I don't wish her any ill, like, she's a sweet person, like, I hope she ends up okay, and yeah, I'm interested to see what happens with Nathan and Gabriel. I wonder if, you know, Nathan will be interested in Gabriel in that way, and, you know, I guess Ellen will probably come back, you know, it'll be interesting.
Okay, so there are some things you are looking forward to seeing, yes, to be followed
and,
up.
And I'm really just interested in getting back to the crazy, you know, bleeped upness, because messed up is not a strong enough word, of this world and this character, and diving back into that madness.
And Karen wants to see the Gabriel spin-off show, possibly with homoerotic undertones.
Undertones?
Well,
depending. This isn't Teen Wolf. There's no undertones.
All right. Everyone breathe.
Let's not bring Teen Wolf into this, okay?
Yeah, Karen has strong feelings. And I'm just not going to read it. So good, everyone. We do have some feedback about it. Actually, Mikhail, do you want to read this tweet? Because they agreed with you.
Yeah. Dracula's Fang 80 was right and said, I loved it and can't wait for the next. It was so interesting and fun to read. It really had me wondering what's next. And I completely agree with that, Dracula's Fang 80. You're a smart and intelligent person.
Yes, who has made a poor reading choice. And so, no, I seriously am interested to hear what any listeners think about this book, because I didn't expect it to be this dividing, I guess. And I don't think we've had a book that we were like this divided about before, like so strongly.
I don't think we've had a book that I've liked this much. I think this is the only book that I remember reading for book hype, like specifically for book hype, that I've been like really, really into. The other books.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, yeah. I don't know why people keep saying that I'm the negative one. Like, you don't like anything.
This is true. I don't like anything.
So, guys, get off my back, please. All I do is make fun of Karen. And speaking of, we had...
Good transition.
You're welcome. that's what I'm here for. We had some other feedback, and we had this from our episode 39 show, where we got sorted into Hogwarts houses, and we asked you guys to do the same for the Divergent factions. And I didn't want to read this last week because, you know, I was alone and abandoned. And so I thought I would read it this week. Okay, so we had two suggestions. This one is from Prisoner Zero, who says, Marimar would be Candor. Marimar is brutally honest and will always tell everyone exactly what she thinks, even if it will make poor Karen cry. So there's our transition. Karen would be Dauntless, because Karen is brave and will always be a book hype staple. She puts up with Marimar's relentless teasing. Marimar has no idea what we're talking about right now, and that takes guts. Yeah, seriously, that's what are you guys so talking about?
Nice. That almost made me cry.
Oh, calm down, Karen. And then Kyle would be Amity, because he will keep the peace at all costs. Who are we kidding? He's only there for the shirtless farmers plus free drugs. I think, I don't, yeah, anyway, no comment. And Mikhail would be Erudite, because they values intelligence, and Mikhail is a very smart person. She may not be the greatest in math, but she excels in other areas.
Okay, wait, and one thing about this. Did I talk about being bad at math on Book Hype?
Yeah, I think you did.
Okay, good, because that's like a major element of my life. I was like, how...
When we were talking about, like, you being a Ravenclaw, you were like, no, I'm bad at math, okay. So... And Jen would be Abnegation, because Jen selflessly holds together the entire Book Hype crew and keeps producing podcasts not for herself, but for the enjoyment of others.
Aww.
So some people got really nice ones. And me, I got a really mean one. Thanks, guys.
But I just have to say, though, somebody questioned whether Karen could be Dauntless, and I think that Karen could kick anybody's ass, 100%. Like...
Yeah, there was some interesting conversation happening, and if you want to read it, it's in the comments on episode 39, and there are, like, some references to Eminem and all good things happening there. So
really? Okay, I really need to go find this now.
Yeah, and before you do, Karen, why don't you read, we had another suggestion from Gary. So that first one, I don't know if I said, that first one was from Prisoner Zero, and then we had another suggestion from Gary65. Who had a slightly different take on our divergent factions.
All right.
Remember Gary's that we're family friendly.
Yes, I will. I will. He says that Merrimah is candor, more honest than honest trailers. The truth is freely preferred and not a single F is given. I think that's pretty accurate.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to make that my like Twitter bio, I think.
I like the more honest than honest trailers. That's pretty good. I would be Amity. Sorry. Does it really need explaining? I'm not sure if she'd be willing to drug a certain Slitherpuff Ravendor. What does that mean? Into pacifistic submission, though. I'll leave that question to those who know her better. Abnegation is also an option, but that involved her getting genocided at the end, so Amity's probably better. Thank you. I don't want to die. Jen would be dauntless. The ringleader of the group maintains order. Being a teacher would also suggest some erudite leanings, but it also demonstrates a familiarity with coercion and authority, so the security forces, aka dauntless, it is. Mikal, the hardest to place, but given her taste in classic nerd culture, I'm going with erudite. The nice erudite, though. Oh, that's good. Like Kara or Triss's dad. I always felt that he transferred to get away from loons like Janine rather than due to a genuine disinterest in learning. No proclivities for brutal murder here.
Oh, I agree with that. Think, Gary 65.
And then Kyle, poor Kyle, would be factionless, not really defined by any one school of thought, and is therefore likely divergent. As a result, he's most likely factionless. Also, the factions are kind of creeped out by his delight in wanton fictional murder and his lack of moral qualms with killing his pets. We will never forget the fish, Kyle. Never.
That was probably the greatest part of book hype that has ever been on an episode.
I think this is the highlight, guys.
That was definitely the highlight. I don't know what we can do to top that.
I don't know.
We did have
love this. I really love this. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I just think it's really funny that I'm either Amity or Dauntless because they seem like opposites to
you're
me.
You're not a Dauntless. Dauntless are dumb. Like, you're not a Dauntless. I feel like you would be more. Amity is so boring. I feel like you could be erudite as well.
I actually see you either Amity or abnegation, Karen, because you're like...
Actually,
you're
so you are nice. So abnegation. Oh, you're such a pushover. You're abnegation,
in a good
100%.
Way, not a pushover way.
You are in a pushover way. You are a pushover.
No, because I was on a five-hour flight with Karen from New York to LA, and I mean San Diego, and I just gave myself the window seat, and Karen did not complain or beat me up. So even though, as I said, she could have, because Karen's a lot taller than me, and she could probably switch me really easily.
Also, like, Karen continues to be on a podcast with me, even though I, like, make fun of her and tease her relentlessly every episode.
Because the greater good.
Exactly.
Karen is always aware of the greater good.
For the general entertainment. So thanks, Karen. We appreciate it.
Yeah. And I have to say, though, I think the thing about Kyle being factionless is actually a compliment. I don't think it's a bad thing.
Yeah, I don't either. Because I actually do kind of see, like, the diversion part. Like, he could be in a lot of different things. But also, his delight in wanton murder and the fish.
Yeah. Okay, so if you want to leave your divergent, I feel like it's not sorting, but I'm just going to call it that. Sorting, or you want to do more Hogwarts, that's great, because I still don't know what house I'm in.
Or if you can leave think of any other ones.
Yeah, sortings. Which we couldn't last week, but if you guys have any, feel free to throw them our way. You can leave them in the comments on this podcast post, or you can tweet us at BookHype, although you might need a little bit more space, so maybe more than the 140 characters.
We do have essays. We expect
yeah, Exactly. We did have a few comments on our last episode, Marimar and Friends, that's me and my friends, about Allegiant, which we split, but I also wanted to let Karen know that Lolita is working on the Percy Jackson series, and Brock is working on the Lost Years of Merlin series for Karen, since no one else will.
Aww. Yeah, a couple people have tried, and then, like, I think they just forgot about it.
Brock also said, big thanks to Marimar for giving the Lumetaire Chronicles so much praise. As you can see by my list, they blew me away because Brock told us some of his favorite books. Although, sadly, I can't really say the same for her other much-talked-about book, The Book Thief. Sorry, Marimar. But that's okay, as long as you tried it. I don't mind what you thought of it, even though you're wrong. And someone else tweeted me this week about reading the Lumetaire Chronicles. So, guys, if you haven't read the Lumetaire Chronicles, I don't know what you're doing, but you need to get on that.
Oh, my God. Can I tell you, my brother read Finnegan of the Rock, and he was like, it's okay, which is sort of how I feel. And then he gave up like a third of the way through Freud of the Exiles. He's like, it's not interesting to me. Nothing's happening. I'm like, yeah, but I'm telling you that this is one of my favorite books ever. Like, this is such an amazing book. And he's like, yeah, I don't know. I'm not going to. It's right here. He went back to school and he left it here. I'm so upset.
Well, I loved Finnegan. I think we talked about this before. Finnegan is my favorite of the trilogy. But here, this will make you feel better. Brock was telling us in his comment his favorite books of all time, and Freud of the Exiles is one of them.
Okay.
After having read them.
I wish you were my brother, Brock.
Well, maybe you could adopt him or something. I don't know. Just trade one out for the other. Anyway, so that is all we have for this episode of Book Hype, and our very next book review show will be about We Were Liars by E. Lockhart, which I just say right now, I totally love this book. And you can always leave us your feedback on iTunes as well, where we appreciate you rating us and reviewing us, and especially if you're Australian, so I don't feel abandoned and left out like I was last week. I'm never going to let this go, guys, just so you know. And, you know, you can also do the American ones for them, that's fine, but as they abandoned me and left me last week, they don't really deserve it.
Marimar just has a list of things she's never over, and, like, it gets longer and longer.
What else is there?
I don't know.
Oh, great list.
Yeah.
There's got to be something.
There is other stuff, yeah.
No, I am not one to hold on to things. I am a very easygoing person. All right. Okay, we're done. Okay, we'll talk to you guys next week. Until then, I'm Marimar.
I'm Karen.
And I'm Michal.
Bye.
Bye, guys.